Hello, everybody. You are back here for another week of Olivia's Obscura. Thank you for joining me. Happy Monday, or whatever day it is when you're listening to this. I'm here by myself this week for the second episode of the season. And today I have a Lifetime movie episode for you. We've done these a few times in the past. Basically, I'm going to take you through a Lifetime movie that I watched and loved. And if you haven't listened to, I think my second episode I ever did is about the Lifetime movie Stalked by My Doctor. That's iconic. I did a three-part kind of like trio of episodes where I talked about different daughter movies, like daughter-themed movies on Lifetime. And there were a couple of doozies in there. Today, I'm going to introduce you to a movie that I watched for the first time a couple months ago, and I just rewatched it today to take detailed notes for it. And boy, oh boy, it's just a good one. It's just some Lifetime movies, there's just a je ne sais quoi about them where they're so bad, they're good. And you, if you're sitting here listening to this right now, you are no stranger to a so bad it's good movie. I kind of like all Lifetime movies. There's something that's kind of like comforting and campy about the like formula. Like they're all of them are so formulaic. You know exactly the structure of the whole movie before it's going to go down. That doesn't make them all good though. I do like watching even the boring bad ones. They just like scratch a certain itch for me. But some of them like are just more fun and compelling to watch. And I think this one today definitely falls into that category of compelling and fun to watch. This is a 2019 Lifetime movie called Deadly Hollywood Obsession. It was also released under an alternate title, Famous and Fatal. They do this a lot. I'm not really sure why, but a lot of the times, like depending on what streaming service I'm using to watch the Lifetime movie, the movie cover art and the streaming service title will be different. So I'm not sure if it's like they were originally released in Canada and then this is the American name or something, or if they just release these sometimes under two different names to like if one isn't performing very well, maybe they'll like change the name, like how YouTubers change their video titles to be better performing. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's something they're doing, but this is a pretty common phenomenon for Lifetime movies to be released under two different titles. So this is Deadly Hollywood Obsession, aka Famous and Fatal. The one I watched was called Famous and Fatal, but it's the same movie, so it doesn't really matter. This is, I have a list a year long of Lifetime movies that I need to cover. Like I've watched hundreds of Lifetime movies over the past couple years, and I have been stockpiling my favorites to kind of go back to and cover on the podcast. One of the ideas that I actually tossed out when I, or that I kind of noodled on a little bit when I was starting the podcast before I kind of settled on a concept and stuff, I was like, I should just do a Lifetime movie podcast. Every week, I should just do a different Lifetime movie. All said and done, I contain multitudes. I have other passions other than Lifetime movies, and I want to talk about other stuff too. So I didn't want to put myself in a box like that. I didn't want to pigeonhole myself into Lifetime movie content forever. That being said, if you listen to my little announcement that I released mid-July about the second season, which we're now in, of Olivia's Obscura, you would know that I am instituting a monthly Lifetime movie episode here. So I think this will be a really good, like some consistency with the types of episodes I'm putting out. It'll be really nice to have one episode a month that is dedicated to a Lifetime movie. And it will also serve as a way for me to work through my back catalog of Lifetime movies that I want to talk about. I just figured we'll slowly check them off the list. And it also gives me an opportunity, because I'm constantly watching Lifetime movies, I can't stop. It's been years. And because there's so many of them and they're so low budget and easy and fast to produce, I will quite literally never run out of Lifetime movies. I actually don't think I I even physically can watch all the Lifetime movies that exist. I don't think there's enough hours in the day, and I don't think I'm gonna have enough years in my life. So it's just really, yeah, for me, this, it's like a never ending well of goodness and of content to consume and talk about. And for that, I'm grateful. So going back to Stalked by My Doctor, which is the second episode of this podcast, which is the movie I talked about there. That movie stars Eric Roberts, Julia Roberts' brother. He's Dr. Beck in all five of the Stalked by My Doctor movies. Speaking of which, I am 100% going to do like a Stalked by My Doctor special, like Lollapalooza, I guess. Not Lollapalooza. What word am I looking for? I think the word that I was trying to come up with but couldn't was Stalked by My Doctor Palooza. That's kind of what I'm gonna do at some point, and I'm kind of thinking about making it a Christmas special. I'm thinking that during the 4 weeks of December, I will use those 4 weeks to cover the additional four Stalked by My Doctor movies that I haven't covered yet. There are five all said and done, and I think that it would be fun to make a month of it and really immerse you guys in Stalked by My Doctor lore. Anyway, look forward to that. That's coming. That's going to be my Christmas present to you. I'm so excited to share something very near and dear to my heart with my amazing audience, my dozens of listeners. I'm very grateful for you. Thanks for being here. But kind of focusing on Eric Roberts, he's writing a book, or he wrote a book. It's coming out middle of next month, so middle of September. And when I saw this, I was like, I have to cover this on the podcast. Like, I just have to get this book. And today I finally bit the bullet and pre-ordered it on Amazon. I have never once in my life pre-ordered a book before, because I just don't care about books. Like, I just never really, like, I'll get it from the library or I'll get it from the store when it comes out. Like, I don't need to pre-order it, but something about this one felt very much like, no, I need to pre-order this book. I need it to be delivered to my house or else I'm not gonna read it. You know what I mean? I need it to show up on my doorstep from the Amazon delivery man. And that's the only way this is really gonna make it into my hands at the end of the day. I don't think that I could walk into a store and purchase Runaway Train, Eric Roberts' memoir. I just, like, there's something about that that I don't really feel good about. I kind of want it, I need it to kind of show up in discreet packaging. You know what I mean? And that's not a dig at Eric Roberts. I mean, like, hell, I'm fascinated by the guy. I'm absolutely intrigued by his lore. I'm so intrigued with the beef that he has with Julia. I'm like, there's something going on there, and I'm hoping that he just bears it all in this memoir. Like, I'm hoping he name drops. I'm hoping he goes into details, because that's what I want. I want dirt. I want mess. And I also want the story of his life, because you guys, this guy, he's like, what? He was born in 1956. That makes him 68 years old. He has been in over 730 movies over his 50-year career. You cannot say that he is not hustling. Eric Roberts not working hard? Ha, yeah, right. Picture that with a Kodak, okay? He's out here. He's hustling. He's grinding. He's getting it done. This is a true working actor, and that I respect. I'm reading an article right now from the Hollywood Reporter from July 9th. The headline is, Eric Roberts says he's, quote, not supposed to talk about daughter Emma Roberts and sister Julia Roberts. However, the actor still finds ways to praise his daughter. She overwhelms me with pride. What's going on here? Eric Roberts is keeping mum, or at least trying to, on his famous family, per instructions. The Oscar-nominated actor was asked about his sister Julia Roberts on a recent episode of Still Here Hollywood podcast, to which he responded, you'll have to ask her. Quote, I love my sister, but I can't talk about her. Eric told host Steve Kometko of his A-list sibling. She don't want to talk about it. However, the Dark Knight actor admitted to his famous daughter, Sorry. However, the Dark Knight actor admitted his famous daughter, Emma Roberts, also, quote, told me not to talk about her, but I stumbled and I do. I'm not supposed to talk about either of them, but I do. Eric is clearly just a proud brother and friend. Sorry. Eric is clearly just a proud brother and father. Later in the podcast, when asked about who he admires in the industry, he couldn't help but praise Emma, whom he shares with his ex, Kelly Cunningham, for her work on Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk's American Horror Story. I'm in love with my daughter's work these days, he said. I can't believe how great she's become. I'm so proud of her. I can't see straight. Da 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 da. I don't know, like... Why don't they want... Here's the thing. I'm never inclined to take the side of a man. Like, if Julia Roberts and Emma Roberts don't want him talking about them, my first instinct is not to blame... is not to assume that it's because they're bitches who want him to keep their name out of his mouth. My first instinct is that he did something to deserve that. And I don't know if that's true. And I don't know if I'm rushing to conclusions here, but... All I'm saying is I gotta read this book, you guys. I'm looking forward to it. I think there's gonna be some tea in there. Anyway, let's move on with things. Today we are talking about the 2019 Lifetime original movie, Deadly Hollywood Obsession. And this movie stars Sarah Romer, Hannah Barefoot, who is one of my favorite Lifetime actresses. Everything she's in, I'm obsessed with. She has been in some hits, such as The Killer Next Door. She's been in a couple... What's the cheerleader movie she was in? I think she was in Identity Theft of a Cheerleader, which I love that one. She was in A Bride's Revenge. Deadliest Switch... or Deadly Daughter Switch, which I covered in an episode from either this past winter or past fall. So Hannah Barefoot, she's a Lifetime queen. Everything she's in, she kind of puts her whole pussy into it. Like, she's really good at playing a villain. And that I'm obsessed with. So right off the bat, we get introduced in this movie to a high-profile Hollywood star named Sam Austin. And we're introduced to them by way of a gossip show, like kind of an Entertainment Tonight type beat, like a little bit of like a TMZ type beat. Like, there's a lady who is introducing you to Sam Austin by basically announcing that him and his partner Naomi are going through a divorce. His wife, I guess. And we're introduced to Naomi herself, who is packing up her things in a hotel room and switches off the TV, declaring that these people are just vultures and they'll do anything to get a story. And she's clearly very upset by the whole ordeal. And if you're aware of kind of the Lifetime movie formula, there's always an intro scene that's a flashback from the rest of the movie. So there's this brief scene at the very beginning that doesn't really come back into play until the end of the movie when they kind of start putting everything together. So this scene serves as that. Naomi leaves the hotel room with her bags, or maybe she was leaving her house. I don't quite know where she was leaving from, but it looked like a hotel room. But the set design in these movies is so bad that I don't know what the intention was. And that's on them, okay? That's on them. So Naomi's fleeing. She's not fleeing. So Naomi gets in the car. She drives away and she gets rear-ended. She's clearly upset. She's distracted, and she is on her way to pick up her son. And she basically pulls over. The car who hit her pulls over. She gets out. She's like, listen, I don't care. The damage isn't even that bad. I'm having a really bad day. I'm late to pick up my kid. Like, I need to go. And the other driver pulls out a gun and points it at her head. And then it cuts, it flashes the title card, and we are in to the meat of the movie. The first scene, the first real scene of our current storyline, we get introduced to a woman named Casey, a young blonde woman, and she is on the couch kikiing with her friend TJ. They are watching an interview on TV with none other than hunky Hollywood star Sam Austin. Now, the guy they chose to play Sam Austin, who is supposed to be like the A-lister, like I think he's supposed to be like a Chris Evans type, because in all of the interviews, he's like, hawking his new superhero movie. So I think the idea was to make this guy, like, this guy's supposed to be kind of like a Marvel star type character. And they just, they didn't, they're not selling it with the way he kind of is and looks. There's been hot guys in Lifetime movies. Lifetime is not allergic to casting good looking men. Like, they do it sometimes, but oftentimes they don't. And whoever the like hot magnetic hunky heartthrob is supposed to be, I'm kind of like, I don't get it. If anything, they cast the hotter guys as villains, which is an interesting choice. They never cast the, like, rarely is there like a character who's supposed to be hot that actually is. The guy who is playing Sam Austin, not to throw him under the bus, his name is John Prescott, the actor's name. He's a very decently good looking guy. I'm looking at his IMDb page right now, and there's really, he kind of almost looks like an older, like, more chiseled Ansel Elgort. Not sure if that's gonna resonate with anyone else, but just this one picture I'm looking at, that's kind of what I'm seeing. But in the movie, like, the way he's styled and the way they have him portrayed in the movie, I'm like, this guy actually isn't even hot enough to be in like a Hallmark Christmas movie. Like, he doesn't even have like that. There's something about it where I'm like, I'm not sold on the fact that women are like drooling over him, okay? Because that's exactly what Casey and her friend are doing. They're sitting on the couch, they're watching him on this interview, and TJ, the friend, is all horned up for Sam Austin, okay? She's like, this man is beautiful. I can't believe that you could have a chance with him. And the reason revealed why Casey, the blonde woman, would have a chance with Sam Austin is because she's a teacher and his kid is in her class. And she denies it. She's like, oh my God, no, like, I would never see him. We're not even in the same league. Like, I would never get a chance with him and I don't even want to. And TJ's kind of giving her a hard time about it. She's like, okay, like, but you should, like, you're boring. I can't believe you never even like fantasized it a little bit, like, live a little, girl. And during this Sam Austin interview that they're watching, they're asking him about his ex-wife, dead wife, I guess. I don't know if they were ever divorced. I think they were going through a separation at the time that she died during the rear-end standoff where the person pulled a gun on her. But the interview asks, like, how have things been going the past year? And he's, like, really way too personal, in my opinion. Like, a celebrity would never act like this. If they have any kind of PR team, they'd be like, don't say this. You know what I mean? Like, I've never heard a celebrity actually talk like this. It's funny because I don't think Lifetime did. I don't even know if they wanted to try. Like, because I feel as though they could have actually done a little bit of, like, basic research about, like, what a celebrity lifestyle is like. But they just chose not to. And it really pulls me out of the story as it's happening, because he's up here on TV and he's talking about, like, well, I know the police are going to find Naomi's killer. My son's my biggest priority right now. Like, me and Jack are just hoping that the investigation finds the person who did this to Naomi. Girl, why are you up on TV saying that? I don't think the detectives would advise that you talk about an ongoing investigation on TV, but, you know, whatever. TJ still, while he's talking about his dead wife, she's talking about how horny she is for him. And she's really pushing Casey to make a move on him. Casey's like, goodbye, girl. I gotta go to bed. TJ leaves. The next scene, we cut to Casey at school. It's like parent drop-off time after school. And we are introduced to Jack, Sam's son. He's a third grader. He's in Casey's class. For some reason, he calls her by her first name. I guess she's a cool modern teacher who has the kids call them by her first name. That's awesome. Jack clearly has a penchant for filmmaking, as the way we're introduced to him is by seeing him filming a movie of a bug with his iPad. Like, he's using his giant iPad and doing like a narration as he's filming this bug walking across a rock. So amazing exposition there. Right off the bat, we know that he is a little filmmaker, a little Hollywood star in the making, just like his daddy. Casey is kind of watching him while they wait during parent pickup because she's on like chaperone duty or whatever. And this is when we are introduced to Lynette, played by the queen, Hannah Barefoot, playing a sinister, delusional woman as we all love to see in a Lifetime movie. And she plays it impeccably. So Lynette is pretending to be Sam's assistant, coming to pick up Jack on his behalf. And she kind of like rushes him to the car. She's like, I'm here. Your dad sent me to pick you up. He really wants to go get ice cream with you, like trying to bribe him to go home with her so that he can get ice cream with his dad. Whatever. She's like rushing over to his car. And Casey then comes over and is like, hey, like, are you here to pick up Jack? And she's like, yeah, I am. I got sent. Sam got caught up. He can't come here. So he sent me. Casey is then like, interesting, because I have the list right here and it says that his aunt is on the list to pick him up and I can't let him go with you without authorization from his dad. It's a school policy. It's a rule. And basically how Lynette chooses to deal with this is by making a grab for Jack and trying to just like wrestle him into the car really fast. But Casey obviously doesn't let this happen. She grabs Jack out of Hannah's arms, tackles him away from her. What did I say? Did I say Hannah? I meant Lynette. Hannah's the actress's name. Lynette is her character's name. She tackles Jack away from Lynette's arms and gets him safe. And Lynette then jumps in the car and speeds away from the school. And everything is okay. Like, Jack is okay. Everything is okay. But this crazy lady just tried to kidnap him, basically. So the police show up, blah, blah, blah. Casey went back into her classroom. The next people we learn about at this time is Sam's associate. His name is Mark, kind of like an assistant type, I guess. He kind of does private investigating and assistant work. He's kind of like a jack of all trades, I suppose. And we also meet a detective, Detective Bruner, who is a hired detective, like a private detective, who is working on the case of who is stalking Sam. Basically, Sam has been dealing with a stalker recently. That's what they say. They have reason to believe that the woman who tried to kidnap Jack is also the person who has been stalking Sam recently. The detective has like some questions for her, like who she was, like she gave a very detailed description of her, and they're like, yeah, like we think this is the person we're looking for. We think this is the Sam stalker. And Casey at this time catches a glimpse of Sam Austin. He's standing outside the window, like in the hallway, and she's looking through the window and the door and like gazing at him kind of dreamily because he's just such a hot, hunky dreamboat. And she's like fantasizing for him a little bit, you know, like I guess TJ kind of got in her head and she's like, oh my God, like what if I do fantasize about Sam Austin while I'm standing in my classroom at my job? What if I turn my water on? Sorry. I don't know. There's this TikTok trend where people are like in the 4DX theaters and they're like, if blah, blah, blah happens, I'm going to turn my water on. Because apparently I've never been to a 4DX movie, but apparently they like spray water at you and like blow wind at you and blow smells at you as part of like an immersive experience for the movie. I don't know. But if you don't know what I'm referencing when I say turn my water on, that would be it. Anywho. Casey's in her little daydream fantasy. Sam himself then comes into the classroom and thanks Casey personally for saving his son. He says that his son is the most important thing to him and that he will protect him at all costs and that there's no way he could possibly ever thank Casey enough for saving him. In the meantime, we're also introduced to Lynette as a character. So we see her storming into her house. She lives with her mother. Her mother is obviously like they're living in somewhat of a volatile living situation because the mom right off the bat is yelling at her, wondering where she's been, why is she home so late, so on and so forth. And Lynette just kind of ignores her, rushes through the house, rushes upstairs into her room, locks the door, and immediately turns on the TV and sees the news about the kidnapping attempt on Jack, Sam Austin's son. She then changes the channel. She's watching one of Sam Austin's movies and she's talking to him on the TV like he's a real person. She's like, I love you. Like, I know we are gonna be together someday. Blah, blah, blah. Like, we are all to assume that she is suffering from some kind of erotomania, some kind of delusion, right? Because she's acting weird. She's acting weird as hell. And it is coming into picture now that she has some kind of obsession, a deadly Hollywood obsession with Sam, if you will. We then cut back to Casey in her classroom talking to Sam. And Sam is basically like, yeah, like Jack really likes you. You're like his favorite teacher. And I gotta say, I wasn't expecting you to be so hot and sexy and young. That's not what he said. He said it in a much more demure and mindful way, but that's what I heard, basically. He's like, well, my third grade teacher was like 75 years old and had a mustache, insinuating that Casey is young and doesn't have a mustache. So good for her, I guess. Anyway, he goes to talk to his assistant. He has to leave because he has some things to deal with. But basically, Casey is like daydreaming about him coming into her classroom and picking her up and fucking her in the classroom. So yeah, and then we kind of fade away. And the next morning, Casey wakes up. She wakes up to a text from her bestie, TJ, sending an article that basically credits Casey with saving Jack. It's like they found her identity. They're like, this is the woman who saved Hollywood star Sam Austin's son from a kidnapper. And it has her picture all over. And I think the website that it's on is called Mackenzie Gossip Room. I think that's the website they keep showing. That's like the gossip site that's always on the computer when they're looking this stuff up. Anyway, so this is the morning after. Casey finds out that there's all this press about her now since she saved Jack yesterday. But we see her driving in her car going to some kind of care facility, like an elder care facility, some kind of hospital adjacent place. And as she's driving, she's listening to a podcast about paying off debt, which, a relatable queen. So she gets to this care facility. She is visiting her mother, and her mother is in a comatose state. She's not awake. She does not able to talk to Casey, really isn't aware of anything. She's kind of in a vegetative state. And as she's leaving the facility, she gets pulled aside by the director, like the owner director of the care facility. And he pulls her into his office and he's like, hey, your mom isn't going to be able to stay here anymore because all of your bills are overdue. Something to the tune of like $14,000, $15,000, if I recall correctly. And that if the bills aren't paid off in full within 30 days, her mom will have to leave the facility. They will no longer be able to care for her, which would be very detrimental considering her condition. She like cannot do anything on her own. She's not awake. So this is clearly a big stressor for Casey. This is the debt that she's worried about. She can't pay it off on her modest teacher's salary. She has a temporary teaching position. She doesn't even know if she's going to still be able to be a teacher next year because she doesn't know if her position is going to get renewed. Blah, blah, blah. It's a whole thing. She needs money bad and she needs it within 30 days or else her mom is basically going to die. So back to Lynette now, okay? Miss Murderous Kidnapper Lynette. She is on her delusional beat again, and she is talking to a magazine cutout of Sam Austin, talking to him, saying that she misses him, that she just needs to see him, that she just needs to see Jack because she's his mother, blah, 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 blah. Whoa, okay? Crazy stuff. Meanwhile, Casey comes home after visiting her mom and sees all of these reporters and paparazzi standing in her yard trying to get her to comment on who the kidnapper was, what she saw, what happened. They're like trying to make their couple hundred bucks off of this like TMZ photo op, right? And basically Mark, Sam's assistant, it swoops in, gets her. He tells these paps to fuck off. He's like, leave her alone. And he basically just like swoops her and pushes her into his vehicle. And Casey's like, how did you find me? Like, how did the paparazzi find me? I don't know. Like, how did you guys find my address? I'm confused. And Mark confesses that as part of his job, which his job is to protect Sam and his security, part of his job is to look into the people in his life and make sure that they are safe and okay to be around. Weird. Okay, Casey thinks this is fine, I guess. She looks a little bit you know, confused, but I guess she's like, this is like a Hollywood guy. Like he, I don't know. She's caught up in the romanticism of it all. You know what I mean? She's like, oh my God, how cool is it? It sucks that like, I can't pay my mom's bills and that these reporters are at my house harassing me. But like, how cool is it that a celebrity is paying attention to me, you know? And I get that. And I get that. Who am I to deny you that feeling? I'd probably feel the same way. Mark says that Sam sent him to pick up Casey because he wanted him to bring her back to his mansion to have dinner with him and Jack as a way to thank her for saving him. So they pull into the driveway. Mark and Casey make it there. Who's waiting outside the property but Miss Lynette herself? She's got her hoodie on, hood over her head. She is being a little stalker. And she sneaks in through the automatic gate that the car drove through at the very last second so they wouldn't see her come in. And she's basically just hanging out around outside the house while the three of them, Casey and Sam and Jack, have dinner and cook and everything. So Casey walks into the home. Basically, this is when this the first time I watched this movie, one of the first notes, because I didn't take detailed notes, but I just like had to write down bullet points as like ways to jog my memory for when I went back to this movie. One of the first notes that I wrote on my first watch was, that's what they think a movie star's house looks like. LMAO. It's empty. No art on the walls or things on the counter. Just a knife block from Home Goods and a prayer. And that's essentially what it is. The houses in Lifetime movies are always so funny because it's clearly like an open house or something. Not an open house, but like a model home, I guess would be the noun that I'm looking for. Like they're so empty and plain, but like styled, like very obviously styled, but in a very minimal way. And I'm like, I don't know. It looks cheap. Like this house looks so cheap. It looks like a new build, like crappy McMansion house. Like they are not even trying to make it believable that this guy would be like a millionaire, billionaire actor. Like it just, there is no world in which this is the house he lives in. It is so funny to me. So Jack starts showing Casey around his house. He's excited. His favorite teacher is there for dinner. So he's like showing her his room and where he plays and where he makes his movies and everything. And meanwhile, Sam is outside talking to Mark by their luxurious pool. Just kidding. It's like not a luxurious pool. Any pool is a luxury to me because I don't even have a pool. But this would be, a movie star wouldn't be caught dead having this pool in their backyard, okay? It was janky looking, I'll say it. And basically Mark is getting real and vulnerable and honest with Sam. He's like, listen, man, this isn't the time for a new romantic connection. Like, your safety should be your priority right now. And I've been, everything that I do is to keep you and Jack safe. And there's clearly like some kind of, oh my God, sorry. The loudest motorcycle ever just went through the alley. Sorry about that. It's very obvious that Mark has some kind of resentment or like weird feelings towards Sam. Like he's very harsh and he's like, I answer to your every whim, like everything. I don't have an answer for that. Oh my God. Why is Siri talking to me? Siri, stop. So their conversation ends by Sam basically hammering home, being really stern with Mark, being like, this whole time his character is kind of like happy-go-lucky, like, haha, I'm a dad, like, I'm just excited that my son is safe. But we kind of see that facade drop for a second here. He gets really serious. He looks at Mark. He says, I insist that you and Detective Bruner find Naomi's killer at all costs. Because at this point, he thinks that it's the same person that tried to kidnap Jack, blah, blah, blah. They think it's the same person. He's like, you got to catch them. So Jack at this point is upstairs. He's like playing, keeping himself busy while Casey and Sam are chatting in the kitchen. He's cooking dinner. My thing is just like, wouldn't you have a housekeeper doing this or like a private chef or something? Like, I don't think that famous people cook for themselves. I really don't. And maybe that's me being naive, but I really don't think that most like A-listers are like, let me whip up a stir fry real quick. Like, I just kind of don't believe that, but maybe I'm wrong. The two of them pop open a bottle of wine. They're chit-chatting. Sam expresses that he's really sorry that Casey is now having to deal with all of this paparazzi nonsense as basically because she is now attached to him and she is in the spotlight for the time being. We now cut to the end of their dinner. Jack says that he's done. He asks if he can go upstairs and work on his movie. And Sam is like, yeah, like, go for it, but lights out in 30 minutes, no exceptions. So he goes upstairs to play, and Casey and Sam stay outside on the patio, chatting, having a nice time, whatever. Lynette, though, is right outside Jack's bedroom window, listening to him, listening to every word that he says, waiting to make her break for it. So while this is happening, Sam and Casey are sitting at the dinner table still, finishing eating. Sam updates Casey about the investigation into Naomi's murder. So she knows about everything. Obviously, this is like public knowledge. So it's not like he's confessing anything to her. This is all stuff that she knows and we as the audience know. But he basically is like, because of everything happening with Naomi's murder and with the attempted kidnapping, I'm going to pull Jack out of school temporarily for his own safety. And the gist of this conversation is basically that he is asking Casey to quit her job and come homeschool Jack full time through the end of the year because he wants Jack to like have some kind of consistency with his schooling. And Casey is his favorite teacher ever. And she is Sam's first pick for like a full time tutor for his son. And he says that she will be compensated very, very well. She's a bit apprehensive still. She doesn't really want to quit her temporary teaching position because, like we mentioned earlier, she's hoping to get brought on as a full-time teacher for a permanent position. So she's like, can I think about it? He basically says, yeah, but you need to think fast. I want to make a decision basically within the next day. So get back to me. Here's my number. So now she has his phone number and she's going home to mull over this job offer. Sam walks Casey outside. They say goodnight. And Lynette at this time sees Sam sending Casey off with his driver to take her back home. And she is seething. She's like, I'm the woman that's supposed to be getting all this attention from Sam Austin, not this bitch, not this teacher bitch, okay? He's mine. That's my man. That's my man. She doesn't end up breaking into the house or anything like that, but she watches this all happen, and then presumably she leaves the premises. So, blah, 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 whatever. The next day, we're now in the next day, the following day. So if you guys are following, this is now Sunday. I need you to know how fast this is all happening. The kidnapping attempt happened Friday night, Friday afternoon after school. Dinner and everything happened Saturday night. And now we are on Sunday. And Sunday morning, Casey is looking over. The thing about this is that we're working with two like gender neutral names here, like Sam and Casey. So I'm getting them mixed up when I'm reading over my notes. So I'm sorry about that. I hope it's not confusing. I know it's so confusing to talk about a movie with an audio medium, but it's my passion. It's what I want to do. I don't want to make YouTube videos. I don't want to worry about how I look. I don't want to input scenes into things. Like, I want to get on here and talk. I want to relay this story to you via the great tradition of storytelling. You know what I mean? And if you don't like that, you can get the fuck off. You can get the fuck off. I don't know why I said it with a Boston accent. Jeez. So, we're Sunday morning. Casey is looking over all of her past due bills from her mom's care facility, mulling it over. She thinks, oh God, I better take this job that Sam is offering me because it's going to pay a hell of a lot better than my temporary teaching position. So she picks up her phone, decides to call Sam, tells him that she thought it over and is like, I'd like to take you up on your offer if it still stands. And he's like, yes, absolutely. We'll talk some details tomorrow. I'm so glad that you decided to do this. At the same time that this is happening, Lynette is in her kitchen making coffee, and her mom walks in and starts talking to her, offering her something to eat. And her mom starts going on about, oh my God, I saw the news. The streets are saying that Sam Austin has a new girlfriend, but I know that's all lies. I know that's fake. I know that you, my daughter, are with Sam Austin, and you and him have something really special. Okay, weird. So now, is the mom crazy? Is Lynette crazy? Are they having like a parallel delusion? Like, what's going on here, right? Why is the mom so willing to believe that her daughter is engaged to Sam Austin and they're just in a secret relationship where they can't reveal anything? Weird, right? Like, how dumb are you, lady? Like, what's going on? Why wouldn't you be more suspicious of your daughter who's telling you this? I don't know. We have to suspend some belief for the purpose of Lifetime, the Lifetime universe. Okay. So we then see that there has been an article published again on Mackenzie Gossip Room. Okay. Mackenzie Gossip Room has entered the chat. The headline reads Sam's New Bae. And it's three pictures of Casey with her long blonde hair and her school teacher smile. And Sam is made known of this. Mark shows him. He's like, look at this article. Like, can you believe it? We need to get them to take this down. And Sam isn't upset about it. He's like, actually, I think this is really good press. This is good for my image. Casey's like the girl next door, and I like being associated with her. So I'm actually not mad about this article. And Mark is like, okay, weird, whatever. Casey is hanging out now with TJ. It's a little bit later in the day. They're kind of trying to figure out what they're gonna do with the day. And then Casey's phone that is sitting face up on the coffee table in front of them starts ringing, and it's Sam Austin. And now, of course, because TJ is hungry and horny for Sam, she's like, you gotta answer it, pick it up right now. And so Casey picks up the phone, and basically Sam is like, hey, like, what are you doing today? And she's like, me and my friend, we're just kind of trying to figure that out. We're sitting here right now. And he's like, okay, go to your front door. Go look at your front door. And she's like, oh my God, what? And she walks through her house, and she walks to the front door, and she opens it up, and there's a car waiting for her outside, a car and a driver. And basically there is someone there to pick up Casey and TJ to take them to a spa day on Sam's dime. And they're like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Like, this sounds so fun. The two girls go to have their little fun day at the spa, paid for by a rich man, as they should. Lynette, though, knows where Casey lives. She has been parked outside on a stakeout watching for Casey, watching for any movement. And so she sees this happen. She sees the driver pull up in the car. She sees Casey and TJ get in the car and leave. And so this is the perfect time for Lynette to make her move. She gets out of the car. She sneaks in through the front gate and then pulls a giant hammer out of her purse to smash the window to get in. The hammer in the purse. It was my favorite detail. Just a giant hammer coming out of her shoulder bag. It was iconic, I tell you. So she gets into the house. She's ransacking the place. She's doing creepy shit, like picking up photos and tracing over Casey's face with her finger. At one point, she goes into the kitchen, pulls a knife out of Casey's knife block, and then goes up into Casey's closet and starts ripping holes in all of her clothes with the kitchen knife. It kind of slays. And this whole time, the girls are living it up at the spa. Casey and TJ, they're drinking champagne. They're getting massages. TJ is taking selfies of herself in her plush hotel robe. I was jealous. I love a plush hotel robe. I want to go to the spa too. You know what I mean? But they leave the spa. They go home. I don't know the timeline this was supposed to take place over. Like, I would assume if you're going to the spa, like, for a spa day, you're there for a good few hours. Like, I'm thinking a 60-minute massage, a facial, you know, like, we're at least 3 hours all said and done with transportation. But when they get home back to Casey's apartment, Lynette is just leaving the house. So we're to believe that she's been in there just like destroying her apartment and being creepy and weird the whole duration of the time that the girls are at the spa. So they walk into the house. They're absolutely shocked to find it like all the furniture thrown around, everything, like glass broken. She took red spray paint and spray painted all over her wall. Stay away from him. Sam's mine. And all these threatening messages. So TJ goes to call the cops and Lynette drives away. We see her get into her car and drive off of the street. Sam, at this point in time, is in his Hollywood backyard. I keep laughing because it's just, you just have to go watch the movie because the set design, the styling, the prop styling, like everything is just like so tacky and cheap. And it's just so funny to see this, what's supposed to be this like hot Hollywood A-lister getting like this janky private massage in his backyard. I don't know. There's something about it that's just so funny to me. So he is laying up, oiled up in his backyard, getting a massage from his private masseuse. And he gets a call from Casey and Casey tells him what happened. She goes, someone broke into my house. They ransacked it. This is what they wrote on the walls, blah, blah, blah. The police are there at that point too. And he, Sam, is like, well, I'm gonna send Mark and Detective Bruner your way as well. So Mark and the detective pull up. The detective and Mark are like, we're going to find this person before the police do. Fuck the police, you know? And to that, I agree, but not for the same reason. They're being shady. It's obvious at this point in time that the detective and Mark are up to some shady business, and TJ overhears this as she's standing outside. She overhears Mark and the detective talking quietly to themselves, and she overhears them say that they need to keep these things from the police, and she clocks that as being weird. Good job, TJ. Slay, queen. Mark goes inside to talk to Casey and basically says that the detective is pretty sure that it's the same woman who tried to kidnap Jack a few days ago. And Mark is like, you need to pack a bag and you need to come with me right away. I'm taking you to Sam's house. He wants you to stay there with him until all of this blows over because he thinks it's safer at his house, I guess. This is so weird. And TJ thinks this is weird too. She's like, why doesn't you just come stay with me? Like, this is so weird. And basically, Mark and Casey are like, well, there's nothing stopping her from finding you at this point. Like, she is, Casey would, is just as much in a position of danger if she was going to stay at your apartment than at her own apartment. So sorry, but she needs to come with me and stay with Sam. I would assume this is because Sam has like a security detail, which is, I guess, inferred because he's famous and his house is quote unquote safer than Casey's apartment. But we never see any evidence of such security. So I digress. Casey does go over with Mark to Sam's house. She packs a overnight bag and basically moves in. She is shown the guest room. Jack is kind of showing her the guest room while Sam and Mark discuss some matters outside. And Jack says that the only rule that Casey has to abide by is to make the bed perfectly every morning because Dad hates messy beds. Okay, like another weird thing, like don't, if you were a rich, rich celebrity who hates messy beds, wouldn't you hire someone to do that for you? Why are you telling your guest you better make your bed perfectly every morning? I better see a quarter bounce on those sheets. You're telling me you don't have a housekeeper, Hollywood hotshot? I just don't believe it. Anyway, Sam comes up to her room at this point, introduces himself. He's, you know, he's like, hey, like, welcome to your room. I hope you like it. I noticed that you didn't pack very much, but check out the closet. I had my team go shopping and pick out a bunch of things that I think you would like. And she basically has this dream closet stocked with all of these clothes that are brand new for her, presumably. And she gets dressed. She gets ready for dinner. She goes downstairs to have dinner with Sam and Jack again. It's really weird considering that these people have been aware of each other's existence at this point for like 3 days. Like, this is Sunday night, and the kidnapping attempt that spawned all of this happened on Friday afternoon. So it has been nary 48 hours, and Casey has quit her job to become Jack's full-time tutor, now moved into Sam's house and is living, like, she's a live-in tutor slash mom figure. Like, it's all really weird because Jack is, like, talking, I don't, like, it's all really weird and confusing. I hate the dynamic that's happening here. I don't know why this is all happening, like, 2 days in to this situation. Like, it's all very, very weird. After they all have dinner, Casey and Sam stay up drinking wine. Casey is notably drinking white wine out of a stemless wine glass in this scene, which I clocked right away because I hate drinking white wine out of a stemless wine glass. It makes it so warm, and I only really like to drink white wine when it is ice, ice, ice cold. Like, I quite literally ice my white wine, and I don't want to have my hand around the cup warming that shit up when I'm drinking it. Put it in a stemmed wine glass. You're a Hollywood hunk. I know you have one. They're kind of bonding over the fact that Jack, you know, lost his mother when he was quite young, and Casey divulges to Sam that she also lost her father when she was Jack's age. So they're kind of bonding over this. They're getting a little flirty, talking about their dead loved ones. Okay. And she tells Sam about her mom, who raised her as a single mom. Basically tells him that she had a stroke last year and she's having a really tough and long recovery. Says that the bills are piling up. The whole thing is just really hard to navigate. And he asks if there's anything that he can do. She declines. She's like, no, thank you so much. I couldn't. But he basically is like, you know what? That's okay. Like, I'm going to be here by your side the whole way through. Again, an intense thing to be saying 48 hours into a relationship, whatever. He then says that she looks so beautiful in the dress that she's wearing. It's this black, like, off the shoulder kind of cocktail dress. And he's like, you look so beautiful. He leans in and kisses her. They kiss for a couple seconds. And Casey then pulls away. She's like, you know, it's late. We really shouldn't do this. But you can tell that she, like, kind of wants to. And she gets up, they part ways. She goes to her room, he goes to his room. But he says to her before she goes upstairs, he's like, if there is anything that you need at all tonight, you know where to find me. You know where to find me. So he's coming on to her. She goes to bed. They do not canoodle at all, but Casey does have another one of her fantasies, and this time her fantasy involves Sam walking into her room and fucking her on the guest bed. Slay. The next morning, I believe we're at Monday morning now, if we're doing this chronologically. I don't know. I don't think that Lifetime really even thinks about that stuff when they're making these movies. You're not supposed to think as hard about Lifetime movies as I do. So I'm sorry if I'm getting the timeline wrong, but as far as I'm concerned, and I've watched this movie twice now, and I took notes, this is all really fast. Like, this is all happening over the course of one weekend. So Monday morning, Casey gets up. She walks downstairs in her little satin pajama set, this little black and white striped shorts satin pajama set. And she comes down to an empty kitchen, and Mark, the assistant, talking on the phone, telling the person on the other end of the line that they need to, quote, take care of this evidence situation before it gets out of hand, end quote. And it's shady. And you can tell that Casey thinks this is shady. And she's like, hey, like, what's going on? And Mark is like, oh, you're up. Like, clearly wasn't expecting her to be listening. He then says, hey, there's good news about your case, about your break-in case. We found fingerprints and they match a woman named Lynette. Ha ha. Lynette is now, we have a name. We've paired her fingerprints with her identity. Okay. Mark then, Sam isn't there. Mark said that Sam had to go to meetings. Jack is still in bed. Mark then is delegating to Casey, like, she's his employee. It's very weird. He's like, you need to get a move on. You need to hurry up. You're going to have to make Jack breakfast. And then after that, start developing your lesson plan and curriculum and get teaching. Sam demands that it happens this way. And Casey's kind of taken aback. She's like, okay, like, weird tone shift. Like, why are you being so aggressive and weird? But she's like, okay, sure, I guess. If I were her, I would have taken up a major issue with the fact that I was hired to do the schooling and teaching, but you're assuming that I'm gonna make your kid breakfast? No, I'm not the live-in nanny, I'm the teacher. But she does it without putting up a fuss. Can't relate, I would have put up a fuss. I'm not making breakfast for this kid and then teaching him. I'm not Michelle Duggar, you know what I mean? So later in the day, after Jack and Casey have breakfast, Casey makes him pancakes, whatever. They're in the backyard working on schoolwork together in the drab backyard with the Costco patio furniture. I'm sorry, I keep dogging on the backyard, but they're hanging out, doing their schoolwork. Casey then gets a call from the care facility that her mom is at, and they have really big news. Basically, her mom finally woke up out of her comatose state. So Casey is freaking out. She talks to Jack. She's like, we need to go. Like, we need to go on an emergency field trip. We have to go see my mom. And she gets him. She gets her bag. They rush out to the front yard. And it's then that she realizes, damn it, she doesn't have her car because Mark drove her over to stay yesterday after her apartment got broken into. So she's like, fuck, I forgot that I don't have my car and I really need it. And Jack then walks over to his dad's car and pulls out, it's like an old car. It looks like an old, like, Porsche or something. I don't know. Definitely wasn't a real Porsche. Lifetime does not have the budget for that. But he leans under and he pulls out one of those little, like, magnetic boxes that you can stick under your car and keep a key in. The audacity of a man, of Sam, a Hollywood actor with a known stalker, he keeps a key to his car in a magnetic box underneath. That is nuts to me. Why would you do that? Have you no common sense? But Jack pulls it out. He's like, I know that my dad hides a key here for the driver. And since it's an emergency, like, you can drive it. Because she's like, no, like, there's no way I can drive your car. And he's like, no, like, you said it's an emergency. Like, I know that my dad wouldn't really care, which the kid is in third grade. What does he know? And Casey's like, yeah. So she takes the key and she gets in the car and she drives them away. So weird. If you're conflicted about driving the car, which this does come into play later, like, it does end up being an issue that she took the car. Why did you take the car? Why can't you call an Uber? Why can't you call a taxi? You're in Hollywood. They keep referencing the fact that they all live in Hollywood, like, in, like, the same town. Like, why? You're in a city. Why can't you call an Uber or a Lyft to take you to the care facility? Why are you risking your job and stuff by stealing your boss's car? I don't know. I can't believe that was, like, her first instinct was, like, yeah, I'll take the car. Girl, call a car. Doesn't he have a driver on standby? Couldn't you call Sam's driver to come get you? To me, her problem-solving skills weren't really all there, but maybe it's because she was distracted because her mom just woke out of her year-long coma, so I'll give her a pass. While Casey and Jack are en route to the hospital, we get cut back to Sam. And Sam and Mark are walking along a street. It's really funny because they do this, like, TMZ style street interview where, like, the paparazzi is recording them, walking with them, holding the mic out, being like, do you have any comment on your new bae, Casey? When did the new lady move in? Blah, 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 blah. And it's really funny because, I mean, if you're like me and you like brain rot and you were raised on, like, the TMZ show, like, for some reason, as I remember watching, like, the TMZ, like, after dinner show. It was on some, I don't even remember what network it was on, but it was always on around, like, 7, 8 o'clock. And I remember watching it, like, as a kid. and so I'm well acquainted. I've been well acquainted from a young age with the TMZ style street interviews. And they're often, like, walking through, like, busy street, but it's really funny because in this footage, the street interview is happening on like a desolate suburban street, like the most Midwestern ass street you've ever seen. Like there's garbage cans out on the curb. There's like Honda Civics parked in the driveway. Like it's really funny to me because it's just so beyond what like a real TMZ style street interview. And it's so funny. I'm obsessed with this scene. I'm obsessed with the way it takes place. So the paparazzi are asking Sam, like, when did Casey move in? And he's basically like, no comment. Duh, obviously. In my opinion, he still says too much because the reporter first asks, how is things going with Casey? And he goes, it's wonderful. Why are you saying, like, why are you saying this? You are 3 days in to a relationship. Have you no decorum? Have you no media training? I'm going crazy. Back at the care facility, the director again stops Casey when she walks in with Jack. And he's like, amazing news. Like, we're so glad that your mom is awake. And we're also so glad that your account is not only paid up currently, but it's been prepaid for the next few months. And Casey obviously doesn't question this. She doesn't say, oh, that wasn't me. But in her head, she's like, okay, like, I didn't pay that. The insinuation is that Sam paid off these bills for her. So she's super thankful. And she and Jack drive back home. We don't even see Casey, like, reunited with her mother now that she's awake. Like, we never see any of that. The mom actually does not come into play for the rest of the movie. This is the last we hear of the mom. Weird, right? I think so. We literally see her laying there, not saying a single word at the very beginning. And I think that's because extras aren't allowed to talk. Like, it's really, really funny when in these Lifetime movies, they have like a few extras in the background. Like every once in a while, there's like a restaurant scene or something where it's supposed to be like a busy, bustling place with a lot of background noise. But there's not any because they can't let the extras speak or else they'd have to like compensate them and credit them as actors. I don't know the union rules of all that, like the SAG rules or whatever. But it's really funny because a way to circumvent this would be to, okay, don't have the extras talk, but put over some kind of Foley like sound that makes it sound like there's people talking in the restaurant, but they just don't do that. And that's what I love deep in my heart about Lifetime movies. I love that they don't give a fuck. Casey and Jack return to Sam's house and Sam kind of flies off the handle. He sends Jack to his room and then totally reams her out for taking his kid away without his permission and using his car without him knowing. And he basically ends things by saying like, we'll finish this conversation tonight. I'm disgusted with you. I can barely look at you right now because of what you did. Again, like a severe tone shift. Like we can see his mask dropping in this moment. Later that night, after everyone's gone to bed, Casey goes down to the kitchen, is getting a glass of water. And who's in the house but Lynette. Lynette has broken in and she's got a knife with her. She pulls the knife on Casey and is clearly trying to intimidate her. Basically says, I love Sam. Sam's my man. You think I wouldn't kill for him? Insinuating that she's there to kill Casey. Not before Sam makes his way down to the kitchen too. And he is talking to Lynette, or Lynette turns around to him and is like, I'm here for you. Like, we're gonna get married and I'm gonna be Jack's mom and everything, like everything that she's kind of been reiterating this whole time. And Sam is looking at her like, I don't know who you are. He's like, we've never met. I've never met you before. You're crazy and you're delusional. And he kind of like tackles her onto the couch away from Casey and he ends up stabbing her in the chest, and she is left to bleed out on the living room floor, very mindful and demure. The other thing that's really funny about this scene is that Casey, like, she came downstairs in, again, her, like, black and white striped satin pajama set to get water, but she's also wearing, like, a strappy black sandal. She's wearing, like, a black Tory Burch sandal, which I just think is really, like, with a heel strap and stuff. I'm like, why'd you put those on to go get a glass of water? That's really weird. I don't know if this is true, but I've heard it a few times that in Lifetime movies, like the actors and actresses have some kind of like clause in their contract where like their feet won't show or something like that, because a lot of the times in these movies you'll see the characters like in their pajamas, like in bed or just like lounging on the couch or something, and they always 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 have shoes on. And so I don't know if it's a rumor or something, but like I've heard before that like there's something preventing these people from being barefoot in the movies due to their contract, and I think that's funny. I'm gonna choose to believe that because I think it's funny. So after this whole altercation with Lynette breaking into Sam's house, the police come. Casey and Sam are talking in the backyard by the pool. He apologizes for flying off the handle earlier when she and Jack came home. He says that it's just because he's really paranoid about Jack's safety and that all of this weird stuff has been happening, and he's just trying to protect his son from danger. And apparently all is forgiven. He says that he was the one who paid off the medical bills earlier, and then they start kissing again, making out, sucking face, tonguing, necking, whatever you want to call it. And she basically pulls away. She's like, listen, like, thank you for apologizing. Thank you for paying off the bills. I so appreciate it. But I just am going to go stay with my friend TJ for a couple of nights because I just need to get away from all of this craziness. Like, I just need a little bit of separation. And he then immediately is like, oh, well, let's get away then. The three of us tomorrow, you, me, Jack, we will all go and drive up to the cabin in the mountains, my childhood cabin, the cabin that my mom owned before she died. And it's just like he's way too enthusiastic about it, and he's way too like it's clear he's trying to isolate her. It's clear he's trying to isolate her. And Sam is like, okay, sure. Like, this whole thing smells so fishy, so shady. And she's like, yeah, like, let's go to the cabin. Totally cool, totally fine. They start kissing again. And the next morning, they're packing up the car. Mark helps load up the luggage into the car and sends them off. And the three of them, this happy family that has known each other for going on probably like 3 or 4 days now. We can't be much past Tuesday or Wednesday at this point. And the original kidnapping incident happened again on Friday. Need I remind you? And all of a sudden, they're going up to the cabins like a family unit. It's all very weird to me. It's giving Daddy's Perfect Little Girl. Daddy's Perfect Little Girl is my favorite Lifetime movie of all time. The perfect Lifetime movie. I did an episode on it. Go listen to it. It involves weird, quickly paced family dynamics as well. I think you'll enjoy it. Anyway, they pull up to the cabin. This whole movie, I really do think that the budget for this movie was $5. $5. It's so funny how they didn't even try to make this look like a luxurious, like, Hollywood life. It's just, I'm obsessed with it. I'm fully obsessed. So they pull up to the cabin. Jack and Sam go inside. Casey's like, I'm going to hang out here. I'm going to call TJ and kind of update her on what's happening. But instead, she pulls out her phone and is watching the news on her phone. And she sees Detective Bruner, the PI, on TV talking to someone about how the investigation into Naomi's murder has been closed. They've called it off because Detective Bruner found the gun that killed Naomi in Lynette's car, he says. And Casey, in this moment, is starting to put things together, and she gets a flashback to when TJ said that she overheard Mark and the detective talking quietly to themselves after her apartment was broken into. And they were saying that they didn't want the police to know certain things. So things are starting to fall together at this point. This is the end of the movie. The last 20 minutes of a Lifetime movie is where everything happens. So buckle up. Casey goes inside the cabin. She approaches Sam. She's like, hey, did you hear that Naomi's case is closed? And he's like, yeah, I did. Mark told me that this morning. And she's like, I actually wanted to talk to you about Mark. And he's like, interesting. Tell me more. She's like, I heard Mark talking about a gun on the phone the other morning when she had come down and Sam had already left. And she's like, it's weird because Lynette never actually used a gun when she broke into our houses. She always only had a knife. And she's like, how much do you trust Mike? And Sam basically brushes it off. He's like, I trust Mike like a brother. I trust him with my entire life. He's never done anything wrong. He's a perfect, perfect boy. I love him. I want to kiss him on the lips. And then Casey's kind of like, okay, well, okay, whatever. She's kind of like, I guess, going to keep the peace for the sake of the weekend, because I think at this point in time, she is starting to catch on that Sam is not everything that he seems to be. Then we cut to Sam once again cooking dinner for the three of them. He's quite the little cook. For a Hollywood actor, he's not doing a lot of acting in these movies. That's suspicious. That's weird. And Sam goes upstairs, is like, dinner's gonna be ready in 10. I'm going upstairs, I'll be right back down. And Jack is like, do you wanna see some of the videos that I've made? And Casey's like, yeah, sure. So Jack is showing Casey footage that he took on his iPad of his dad and his mom, Naomi, before she died. And they're watching this video. Casey's watching this video that Jack took of the two of them sitting in a living room, I think like sitting in the same cabin that they're in right now. And the mom, Naomi, is wearing the same black dress, off-the-shoulder black dress, that Casey was wearing the other night when Sam had told her that she looked beautiful and kissed her for the first time. And in this video, while it's rolling, you can hear Naomi, or you can hear Sam say to Naomi, you look so beautiful in that dress tonight. Oh, so Casey is rightfully skeeved out at this point. And Sam just so happens to call Jack upstairs. So at this point, Casey is alone in the living room with the iPad, and she starts going through the camera roll. She scrolls to another video, and it happens to be a video that Jack was recording. Jack was secretly recording when Sam was talking to Mark, telling him that Casey was good press and like good for his image and that she's like the next girl next door type and everything like that. And Casey didn't know that he had said this, and she's really weirded out by finding this footage in the iPad. She goes to another video on the iPad, and it's a video of Sam and Lynette talking on the couch. And there's this, it's crazy that there's just all this video, perfect video evidence on the kid's iPad. I think that's a very nice touch. During this video, Sam is talking to Lynette saying that, I love you so much. Our relationship has to stay a secret for now. But as soon as you finish the job, aka kill Naomi, then we can be together publicly. So he is using Lynette, who is obsessed with him, to kill his wife. And he gives her the gun. He's like, here, take this. Kill her with it. He knows that Lynette really wants to be a mother, and he's using this as kind of like a bribe to get her to kill Naomi. He's like, you can finally be a mom just like you've always dreamed after you finish the job. After you do it, like, make it really fast, leave really fast. Mark is going to meet you in the desert, and he's going to take care of the gun. He's going to hide all the evidence. Boom. Whole story's out in the open. What Casey doesn't know is that Sam has been behind her this whole time watching her watch that video. He's like, pretty good one, huh? Not my best performance, but I thought it was pretty convincing. And this is when Casey realizes that Sam is a psychotic killer himself. So he admits to Casey that he wanted Naomi to go away quietly, without problems, without bad press. He didn't want her to put up a fuss. And she was also trying to take custody of Jack. And he's like, the one thing that I would not let happen is that she could not take Jack away from me. I had to have her killed because I could not have my son be taken away from me. And he basically said all this disparaging stuff about her, like she rode his coattails to stardom and that she would have been a washed up old hag without him. And Casey, as this is happening, pulls a pot of boiling water off the stove and throws it on Sam's face. He gets knocked out. He falls to the floor, presumably in excruciating amounts of pain, all right? She, Casey, grabs Jack. They escape into the woods surrounding the cabin. Shortly after, Sam gets up and starts chasing after him, and he only has minimal burn damage to his face. So congratulations, I guess he has really thick skin because it was boiling water that was poured after him, and I would think that he wouldn't even really be able to stand up. I would think he would be in shock at this point, so way to go, Sam. Casey and Jack are running through the woods, and they hide behind a tree. They can hear Sam yelling for them, and Casey is whispering to Jack. She's like, I'm gonna get up. I'm gonna create a distraction. What you need to do is you need, when I leave, you need to count to 10. When you get to 10, you need to run as fast as you can back to the house and call 911. And she has this whole plan cooked up, whatever. She gets up. She sends Jack to go call 911. Casey's running through the woods and eventually runs into Sam. And he tells her that he's not going to hurt her. She's like, you just need to calm down. Like, I'm not going to hurt you. All I wanted was for us to be a family and for you to be Jack's mom. The same old song and dance that he pulled on Lynette. And presumably Naomi at this point. Like, this guy's just a serial offender who keeps, like, manipulating women and killing them, you know? Jack, at this point, who's supposed to be inside calling 911, yells, Dad! And he distracts Sam. Sam whips his head around. And Casey uses this distraction to grab a massive rock and throw it over his head and knock him out. Fuck yeah, I love it when people in Lifetime movies kill someone by hitting them over the head with a giant rock. This is the very end of the movie. We flash forward. We have a bingo card. Me and Ty have been playing Lifetime bingo for like way over a year at this point. We have this kind of like working Lifetime bingo card with all of the tropes, and one of the squares on the bingo card is flash forward where everything is okay, because 99% of Lifetime movies end with a flash forward scene where everyone is okay, nobody's in therapy, nobody's traumatized, nobody has complex PTSD after all they've witnessed, and everything is fine. And that's one of the things that is so comforting about a Lifetime movie. How can you not love that, right? So in this final scene, we are left on such a note where the aunt Meredith, Naomi's sister, who was supposed to be the one picking up Jack from school when the kidnapping thing happened, she drops him off at school, and Casey is back. She got her old teaching job back. Sam is in her class again, and they all lived happily ever after. Wasn't that a heartwarming tale? What do you guys think? Feel free to leave your thoughts in the comments. In case you didn't hear Spotify now, if you're a Spotify head, you can leave a comment on a podcast episode. Please do. I'm dying to know if you have watched and loved any Lifetime movies. I am, of course, taking suggestions for the movies that I'm going to cover on this podcast. There's just something that I love about watching a Lifetime movie not only once but twice, and then hopping on a microphone to regurgitate it all back again. It's soothing to my soul. It's a balm, you know? It's medicine. And I can only hope that you enjoy listening to this episode a quarter of as much as I liked making it. Did that make sense? After an hour and a half straight of talking by myself, I think I start to mix up my words, and I don't know what I'm saying as I'm saying them. But I think all of the obscure heads out there catch my drift. They know what I'm saying. Y'all know what I'm saying. You've been with me at this point for 32 episodes. 32 episodes. And I'm so looking forward to seeing you again next week for a brand new episode. And if you like this episode, please make sure to follow or subscribe to the show, because I will be covering a different Lifetime movie every single month. And every single week, there will be a new episode that is a complete surprise to you and to me for the most part. So stay tuned. I'm so glad to be back with weekly episodes. It feels so good. And yeah, let me know your thoughts. Follow the podcast on Instagram, okay? At ObscuraPod. We out there. And I'll see you next week. Okay, bye.